Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
Drilled to center field and deep. Back out of his seat, to the track, to the wall, it's gone! Evan Longoria with a two-run home run to straightaway center, and he gives the Rays a 6-4 lead here in the ninth.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
The 2-2 now. Check swing on the slider, strike three. Chris Archer jumps off the mound and bounces his way to the dugout.
Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Hi, everybody. Good afternoon. Welcome to our show. This week, we get to know more about reliever Kevin Jepsen and his return to Tampa Bay. Lots to talk about at the trading deadline. Todd Callis of Fox Sun Sports will be with us. We'll visit with Durham manager Jared Sandberg, who's going to the Arizona Fall League. Chat about the entire system with Mitch Lukovich and look at the deadline on a national front with Sweeney Murdy, who covers the Yankees, and also Anthony Kastrovitz of MLB.com. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball. Our featured guest this week is Kevin Jepsen. And, Jep, we are now a little bit over 24 hours before the trading deadline. So take me back a year and remember what it was like for you at this time a season ago.
Yeah, it was, you hear all the rumors. The media's coming up asking you, if you're reading everything that's out there. You know, where do you think you'll go? Do you think you'll get traded? It's definitely... can wear on you. You know, as a player, you're out here trying to win games for your ball club. Last year, you know, I felt that we were in the race, so I didn't think that there was a chance I would get traded. We fly up to Boston. It's the last day of the deadline. We're getting down 2 hours before the deadline, and at that point I figured, okay, I'm in the clear. And about 20 minutes later I get a call from Cash.
How surprised then were you, and what was the conversation like?
At that point, you're just trying to take it all in. Okay, I was getting traded to Minnesota, so now I'm trying to figure out. I got all that stuff racing through my head. I go to the ballpark to get all my stuff, play catch, with Kersey one last time, talk to the guys, say bye. That was the hardest part, leaving the guys, leaving the clubhouse. I enjoyed my time here. I'm back now, but it's tough. From a player standpoint, the midseason trade is definitely something that's probably one of the hardest things I've gone through in my career.
Was it harder than the trade, let's say, from the Angels, your original organization, because that occurred in the offseason to the Rays?
Absolutely. The offseason, you have time to let it soak in. You have time to talk to guys, and then you have all of spring training to get to know everybody. And so that way when the season starts, you've had 6 weeks with the guys. When you go mid-season, the team's been playing together for, however many months, including spring training. There's always a feel in the clubhouse that they already have, and you're coming in, you're the new guy, you're taking somebody's spot. And if you're getting traded to a contender, you're the guy that's going to come in and help them get there. It's, the thought. So it's definitely a stressful time, and that's not even including finding a place to live. You have no car, it's a new city. All that goes in the midst of you still trying to go out there and get guys out.
And you mentioned, in the days leading up, they're asking, are you reading? Do guys in the clubhouse read? Do most of people ignore it? What are the conversations like?
I would say it's about half and half. Some guys are always on, MLB app or, on the MLB trade rumors. Some guys just love doing that. They love being on there and being up to date and everything that's going on. And then you have other guys that, I don't want to waste their time with all the rumors and, because it changes every day. This guy's going to this club, then the next day he's going over here. So, it's hard to keep up. But, I would say it's mixed. It's about half and half.
What about you? Do you watch it anymore? Do you listen to it? Do you tune it out?
Yeah, I don't get on there and read up and watch it on TV. You drive yourself crazy, at least, for me. But, like I said, that's just me. Other guys like to know and be in the know. So, it just depends on who you are.
I think it's pretty admirable how the starting pitchers especially and the guys who've been rumored during this whole stretch have handled themselves. How impressed have you been since you've come back here about the way they've carried themselves on the field? Because I would imagine from a human standpoint, it's not easy to perform night in, night out when there are rumors about you.
Yeah, especially, the way this season is, with so many games out and the way these guys have been throwing the ball, there's no doubt that there's so many clubs out there that would love to get any one of, you know, our starters. So for them to be able to go out, tune that out, and pitch, not just good, but how unbelievable they've been coming out of the break is, it's really impressive. It's fun for somebody like me to watch.
You came back at the break. Walk us through what happened and why you said, I want to be with the Rays.
Yeah, I mean, obviously season didn't go as I had planned. I was in a unique situation where, you know, I was back at home, 10, 12 days in the middle of summer, which, you know, was kind of nice, but maybe under different circumstances it would have been a little better. But, you know, and then I had a lot of teams to decide, and that was the hardest part. I guess it was my first taste at free agency, but kind of in a different light. It was pretty stressful, to be honest with you, trying to figure out the best situation for me to finish up the rest of this year strong going into free agency. You know, I had some teams that had offers to go do that were, you know, in the playoff hunt, and that's obviously ideal for a player, you know, to go somewhere that's you have a chance to get back to the playoffs and that whole deal. You know, and I was getting texts from, you know, a bunch of front office guys here. You know, when you have the GM and assistant GMs and manager and coach and pitching coach, all these guys texting you and calling you, you know, from a human element, it's huge. You know, you put away the baseball part and you just, you know how much fun you had playing here in Tampa, and love the staff, love the guys, and ultimately that's what pushed me over the edge in the end.
You mentioned staff in front office, but I know Longo texted you, and he was one of several players who said, hey, we need Jet back. I mean, was there a text or a message that put it over the top?
I think it was just, you know, the cumulative. Like you said, you know, I've been talking to Longo, you know, all year, just back and forth. But, yeah, once I was done with the Twins, you know, Longo was texting. I got a text from, you know, Cobby. And I don't know that it was just one, you know, but, you know, Hickey and Stan are calling me, you know, Cash. And then once you get the bosses involved and they start texting you, you know, it definitely sets them aside for sure.
When you came back, one of the things that was said by Evan is it doesn't matter what he does on the field. He means so much to this clubhouse and what he can do in terms of helping the bullpen and helping the guys beyond the fact that he's a talented pitcher. What does that mean to you, and what does make a good clubhouse guy?
To be honest with you, I don't know. No, it definitely means a lot. I've never been one of those guys that's rah-rah, you know, hold team meetings, stand up there and tell guys we need to do this, we need to do that. I just like to have fun, you know, enjoy being at the ballpark, you know, thing I learned when I was younger on the Angels, and you know, you got teams that make the playoffs and teams that didn't. The teams that stayed even keel the whole season, you know, don't get too low when you're going through a losing streak, and don't think you're as good as you are when you're, you know, 10 games up. You know, you just keep going out there and grinding every game. But after the 27 outs are made, you know, enjoy being at the ballpark. You know, if you're struggling and going through, it doesn't mean you can't smile and have a good time. You know, I think there's some times, and we all do it, you know, you're struggling and that carries over into the clubhouse, and you take it home with you, and next thing you know, you're spending, you know, every part of your day just being miserable, and it's, the game's too hard. So just, you know, keeping it loose, having fun in the clubhouse, and, you know, enjoy the guys you're with.
Who is an example of that, as someone you were with the Angels that did that for you and kind of taught you the way?
Yeah, I think when I first came up, we had such a good clubhouse. You know, veteran guys like Lackey and Scott Shields, and, you know, I played my first 4 years with Torrey Hunter. You know, Torrey keeps clubhouse loose, you know. He's more competitive than anybody I've ever seen when the game's going on. And as soon as the game's over, I think he gives himself about 20 minutes, 30 minutes, you know, to be pissed off about however the game went, if it didn't go good. You know, and then he's back to his same self, and every day, whether he's, you know, 0 for 40 or 40 for 40, he's walking into the clubhouse in a good mood, you know, and enjoying the job that we get to do. So seeing that, you know, okay, just resonated with me, and I figured, you know, look, if this guy come in and be happy every day, you know, You got to enjoy what we do.
And I think there's something to be said, too, for being a mentor like that. How can you help? Because I know the staff overall has pitched much better since the All-Star break. How can you help some of the guys down in that bullpen? Because it is a pretty young group, learning how to win and do the little things in a bullpen to allow them to be successful or more successful.
Right. I think I just try to instill with these guys is that you can't focus on the results because we can't control those. Just focus on your preparation. You know, stuff you can come in and control every day is the attitude when you get here. And then your routine. You know, don't take a day off. Don't skip out on stuff that you do every day. And just get yourself ready to pitch. And I think that gives you confidence when you get out on the mound that you know you've already put the work in. You've already, gone through the grind. And the fun part is now out there on the game. You know, take the work and do it inside. So that way you can just have fun out here. And, don't hang your hat too much on what goes out here, because there's going to be times where you feel like you can't get anybody out, and there's times where you're the best pitcher in baseball. So take it for what you will and just have fun out there on the field. And don't worry about the stuff. Once you let go of that ball, you have no control over what happens. It's a round ball. It's a round bat. You know, sometimes they square it up and it's right at somebody. Sometimes you break a bat and it flares in. So, if you get hung up too much on the outcome of exactly what's going to happen, it's going to be a long season.
But that said, your outcomes have been better since you came back here. And I know that one of the things that you enjoyed about this organization was their attention to detail and data. Are there things that they picked up from your time in Minnesota that you've now used to start to help you with your process?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I got here the last day of the break. Just kind of came in, set my stuff down. The very next day, I was sitting down here in a video room with Eric Neander and just going over just numbers, stuff that I've already done, and that's what I love about here. It's not a, it's not theories on what we think might happen if you change this, or if you try this, this might happen. It's here's what you've done. When you're successful, you're doing X, Y, Z. And when you're not, this is what's happening. So, for them to put that in front of you, it gives you such much more confidence, I would say. Knowing that, my biggest thing was strike one, and they're just, I think it was over the last year and a half, I got through 166 or something first pitch strikes. I'd given up 6 hits, so when you see stuff like that, it's, why would you not throw the ball over the plate? Even if it's right down the middle, you've given up 6 hits out of 166. Those are pretty good odds. And it's stuff like that. And then when you get behind, the numbers change to X. So it's little things like that that go beyond stuff that you can control. You can control throwing strikes. So if that's all it takes is to help myself out, that's an easy fix. So, it's little info like that that they spend hours on there doing, and they come down and show us. And you kind of feel like an idiot going, man, so simple. But it's things like that that allow us as players to get better.
And it's a game that's far from simple, as we all know. You seem to have such a comfort level here. Is there a chance, and how good a chance, do you think that after this year, if all goes well, you'd want to be here again next year as you decide on free agency?
Yeah, I would love to. I would absolutely love to sign back here. Chance-wise, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But, Tampa would definitely be at the towards the top of my list, as far as places to sign back. So, hopefully it's the year ends well, and we get to have that conversation.
Well, continued success in the clubhouse, on the field. Continue to have fun, and it's great to have you on This Week in Rays Baseball.
All right, thank you.
That's Kevin Jepson. We'll continue right after this. You're listening to the Rays Baseball Network. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball. Todd Callis of Fox Sports Sun joining us. And TK, hard to believe the big news of the day is something that might have been caused by the Rays winning the first two games of this series against the Yankees. Andrew Miller going to Cleveland.
Yeah, it's deja vu, if you will. Dave Dombrowski, who was then the GM of the Tigers last year, said when the Rays won the first two games of that series, that kind of freed them up to trade a David Price to Toronto. And prior to that, they were kind of in the same position the Yankees were, where they weren't sure if they were in or out. Before Brian Cashman said after the Aroldis Chapman trade, this is not a white flag. But when you go both Miller and Chapman, it's obvious that the Yankees are trying to build, to create some pieces for the future and not worry so much about 2016. But yes, the Blue Jays in 2015 and the Indians this year can thank the Rays for winning the first two games of a series leading into the trade deadline.
Certainly has impacted things. And Steve Pierce not in the lineup today. I'm sure that's going to lead to all kinds of speculation because here we are just over 24 hours away.
Yeah, you've got to find a way to play Tim Beckham somehow, and Pierce gets the day off. You know, Steve's been playing a lot since he came back from that hamstring injury, and he really didn't have much of a rehab. So they're going to find him some spots. Of course, it looks a little strange leading into the trade deadline. I would say of all the players on the roster, he's the most likely to be dealt, which is unfortunate because he's, in a short amount of time, become one of my favorites that have not only been on this team but in any Rays team. They're just the way he goes about his business. Great clubhouse guy. Really plays the game of baseball the right way. And we haven't had a ton of those types of players. So unfortunate if he is traded, but hopefully it's just for a few months and possibly the Rays can entertain getting him back for next year.
Indeed, especially a guy who lives locally here in the offseason. You know, with all the trade rumors, what's been most impressive is the Rays starters have been at their best while all the rumors have been swirling.
Yeah, I don't know if there is a motivating factor there or not, but you're right. Ever since the All-Star break and leading into this trade deadline, the starting pitching has been beyond solid. It has been lights out. A 1.50 ERA over two full turns in the rotation for the starters is otherworldly. And the Rays have the best team ERA since the All-Star break. This is even better than you could have hoped for going into a season. So it's hard to say this is what the Rays have been waiting for because it's beyond that. But somewhere between the unbelievable performance where they are now and where they were the first half, if they were a little closer to this 10-game stretch, then I think the Rays wouldn't be talking about being sellers. They'd be talking about where they are in the wild card or division standings.
Indeed. And, you know, that said, you know, you take a look at the way they've pitched, and is there a Kevin Kiermaier factor in all this? Since he came back at the break, the defense has been better. Now Luke Maley's been behind the plate, too, and suddenly the guys are pitching better. Coincidence or not?
Well, it's hard to diminish what your defense can do for your pitching staff, and there is certainly a KK factor. There's no team in baseball that wouldn't be better as a staff with KK, Kevin Kiermaier, in center field. So there's definitely a factor. How big of a factor it is, it's hard to quantify. I know there's defensive runs categories that he creates more defensive runs saved than anybody in baseball, but there's definitely an energy level that lifts up too when Kevin Kiermaier's on your team. You look at his raw numbers, his average, and his on-base percentage, and it doesn't really speak to what kind of dynamic player he is. Last night being a great example. Not only the catch in center field against the wall, which saved Matt Andrees after he had just given up a home run, but that previous half inning where he turns a single into a double, challenging Carlos Beltran. He steals third base. He brings the infield in and allows Steven Souza to hit a ball that may or may not have been caught, possibly not, but still it's an easy single now with the infield in as opposed to the infield back. And now all of a sudden, instead of a guy on first base and Souza at the plate, Souza with the infield in with a little flare in the left field ends up driving in a run.
And the way I look at it, Kevin's impact too, is the fact that, you know, where he can cover allows the left and right fielders to play more toward the line, and that allows you to cover more ground as a group, and it gives the pitchers confidence and conviction maybe in their pitches.
I think that's a good point. I think that's overlooked is the impact he has on the corner outfielders and where they're allowed to roam, and they don't have to be as close to center field when he's out there just because he does have that much coverage. So you're right. Not only it helps your whole area in the center field quadrant, but it also helps your corner guys and where they can position.
Should be an interesting next 28 hours. Hug Watch, I guess, is on in all dugouts around the country, and especially this one.
Yeah, you know, I think it's likely something will happen, even if it's just one deal. And if the Rays get overwhelmed, I would think that there's certainly the possibility that one or two of the starters could be gone by tomorrow. We'll see. But, you know, right now it looks like as we sit here prior to the Sunday game, it's not going to be a major deal, but a lot of things can change between now and then.
And that is Todd Callis of Fox Sports Sun. Before we continue, let's pause for station identification on the Rays Baseball Network.
This is Tampa Bay Sports Radio.
To the wall! Gone!
620 WDAE St. Petersburg and 95.3 FM, home of the Rays.
Neil Solon's with you on This Week in Rays Baseball. We're going to get away from the trading deadline for a moment. This week on the minor league side, it was announced Durham manager Jared Sandberg is going to manage in the Arizona Fall League. And Jared now joins us. Jared, thanks for a few minutes, and congratulations.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. As a player, never had the opportunity to go out to Arizona. So to be able to go out there as a manager and be a part of what the Arizona Fall League means and what it's about is really exciting, and it's going to be a great experience for me.
From a managerial standpoint and from a coach in the Rays system standpoint, give us some perspective what it means to you to get the opportunity to be there for this six-week stretch.
Yeah, I mean, it's a chance for me to be around some top prospects, meet some good prospects and some players, and just continue to manage. And for me, developing me as a manager and get out there and meet some different people in the baseball industry, whether it's scouts or GMs or other farm directors and field coordinators that come in. So just going to be a good interaction and a good experience as a whole.
It seems that you know, the league, I wouldn't say is skewing younger, but last year the Rays had Jake Bowers and Daniel Robertson, who is now playing AAA baseball. But you're going to have some guys who you maybe haven't managed yet. From a Rays standpoint, how much do you think that will help to get to know some of those guys better?
Our organization, but I've got to a higher level and been able to back with. From a baseball standpoint, it's going to be good to get to know some of the younger players when and whoever those players, just because, you know, for those first 5 years in the lower levels and got to see the players as they came in to the system from our draft and was around all those guys, and boy, those guys are coming up here, but some of the younger players that haven't been around, it'll be a good time to.
I know from a managerial standpoint in the Arizona Fall League, I wouldn't say, you know, things are somewhat controlled, but they are to a point because certain guys have to play certain amounts. But is there anything as a manager that you think you could learn from an opportunity like this?
Yeah, it's just different personalities every day and from other organizations. So I think managing the game will be similar to what we're doing right now as far as there's a lot of structure and not a lot of in-game moves, but I know my staff up here with Kyle Snyder and Ozzie Timmons were continuing to have conversations throughout the game and talk different strategies, even though they don't really necessarily happen. But I think, you know, in there, it's going to be good because I'll get to continue to be more organized, and there's a lot of structure out there for as far as, you know, staying ahead on lineups for the week and what my responsibilities are in Austin. And a lot of information I haven't gotten yet, so I'm still gathering different conversations. Yesterday, Louisville Bass in town, and Delano DeShields is their manager, and I was saying as far as what he went through as a manager in the Arizona League. And he said that, you know, it's pretty much what the players play and keep up with the tradition, and pretty much.
Jared, the other thing I was curious, you know, from a playing standpoint, you know, it's the trading deadline now, and your guys are as close to the big leagues as any. Do you have to talk to guys at all? I mean, do they start to worry about what's going on or start to follow the headlines and things of that nature? And did you do it much when you were a player?
I do it much as a player, no. But I know that, you know, there's, you know, everywhere that these players read and their name, it's easy to get caught up in the situation. So I just tell them through different conversations that they just need to focus on the task at hand, that's playing baseball. And if their name's called in a trade and they have to go somewhere else, so trying to go out there and play, think about going to another or one of the big trade, they're not going to play very well. So the task at hand is to play baseball and not worry about the business things too much. It's funny, some of this written on in our clubhouse, like run a rotation, so some of the players line up. The other day, a couple of the players were out of the lineup, and they were joking, "Oh, must be trade deadline. What's going on?" And I said, "Yeah, you just can't worry about it. There's some jokes going on when guys are out of the lineup and stuff like that." But I think we're focused on the task at hand. We're a good ball club right now here in Durham. We're a first place team. We've come a long way from season, so I think we're kind of stuck behind us. We're just playing baseball.
Well, we appreciate a few minutes. You're right. You guys are playing your best baseball of the year, and I'm sure we're going to touch on some of the prospects and how they're evolving as we go here in the final 6 weeks of the season for you. We appreciate a few minutes today, and again, congratulations on the Arizona Fall League.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You got it, Jared. That's Jared Sandberg, again, manager of the Durham Bulls. They are in first place in the AAA International League, and he's going to manage in the Arizona Fall League. We take now a closer look at the Rays minor league system, and joining us, Director of Operations Mitch Lukovich. And, Mitch, before we touch on some players, what does it mean to see Jared, who you had as a player in the system and now managing for several years, go to the Arizona Fall League to do the same?
Well, Neil, that's a great feeling for us. You know, Bill Evers was the manager. I was a pitching coach here in 1996 with Jared, first time with us, and was a Devil Ray at the time. Got to the big leagues, as we know, and now managing our Durham Ball Club the last 2 years. And here, he's gotten a wonderful opportunity to keep learning in the Arizona Fall League. We're really proud of that.
Let's touch on the system for the year. To this point, what would you say are the best stories in the system in terms of guys evolving or taking major steps forward?
Well, you look at Willie Adames. You know, he's the headline player. I don't like to single out players, Neil, because there's a lot of kids that are performing. You might not mention her name, but Willie Adames is having a banner year. The Honeywell kid that we promoted had a little arm I wouldn't say setback, but a little stiffness in his arm. He's performing real well. We got the McCarthy kid to our Stone Crab team from Bowling Green, and Cronenworth, the same thing. So we have some kids that are making progress through the system. I'll only mention a few, and our teams, you know, it's the dog days. It's August, and our teams, for the most part, are really competing in the leagues they're playing against.
And we're going to spend a little bit more of the time on the full season clubs, Mitch, but there is one guy at the short season level I wanted to ask you about just because of the numbers that he's putting up. Adrian Rondon, I mean, it seems night and day from his first year coming to the States. How big a transformation has he made? I know he's still a very long way away being in Princeton in the rookie league.
The greatest transformation in a young player. He's so young. He signed at 16. He just turned 18. A very young, immature, you know, mentally kid, certainly had physical tools. And we got him in camp, I would say in January, with Willie Adames and Andrew Velazquez. And we were just slowly working on a few things in the offseason. And with him being with some really good, mature players, it helped him mature. And the physical tools are coming through. And you're starting to see the bat play like everybody thought his bat would play when he was signed. So we're really excited about that, and yet he's at the ripe age of 18, Neil.
Yes, and again, obviously very talented. Now, at the top of the chain in Durham, there's a guy who's made a lot of progress this year from the pitching side that you moved to the bullpen. How impressed have you been about the way Ryan Stanek has handled the move to pitching out of the pen?
Well, it's tremendous, and you know I'm a very positive guy, but here's a young man that was often hurt young in his career. And through his hard work, our medical team and our pitching coaches trying to find the right niche for him. Now, when you have a good arm, we like to start guys, but it wasn't holding up. We break down. Louie Robinson and our staff kind of tweak the arm action a little bit, which sometimes becomes risky. With the help of Joe Bench and Joel Smith, our medical guys keeping him healthy, he's a power pitcher, 100 miles per hour, 98, hard, sharp slider. He's in the best shape of his career. His physical health has been good, and we're still guarding him. You know, you're just never out of the woods. You monitor what he does, but my God, he has major league plus-plus stuff.
A kid further away that I'm hearing a lot of good things about from a bullpen standpoint, started the year in Bowling Green. He's now at High A. What can you tell me about Diego Castillo, who's now with the Stone Crabs, pitching out of the pen there?
Well, you know, when you say with good arms, Diego Castillo has that. And I want to throw in Ian Gabeau, a first-year, full-year player, almost in that category. Diego's a product of a Latin program, but he's 98, 96, hard slider, you know, competes. He's starting to learn how to control his pitches. You know that right raw resource, and the ball's all over the place, and through good work, he's learning to throw a quality strike. And this kid, Ian Gabeau, the same in his first full year. Maybe a tick below with Diego, but both big arms that compete one day as they keep making progress can compete on the major league level because of the stuff they have.
Well, that's encouraging. You know, another thing that I think is encouraging, I mean, you guys have pushed some guys, and Willy Adames is, again, just 20 years of age. I think quietly, Jake Bowers has had a pretty good season at the same level for AA Montgomery. What has impressed you about his year?
He's steady. And this is what I mentioned earlier, Neil. You mentioned Willie, you mentioned Honeywell. You can always forget. You don't want to forget, but you forget that Jake Bowers, you know, what is he, 20 as well? He's playing almost now a full season in AA. And what you love about Jake Bowers, he's steady. He comes to the ballpark every day the same way. There's no up, no down, so to say. If there are downs, he handles it. If there are up, he handles it in a professional manner. You don't get too giddy. You're playing the next day. And young Jake Bowers has that right mental approach to take on the professional game because it's every day. It's a roller coaster ride for a lot of these kids. And a lot take a lot longer to handle it. And he's handled it at a ripe young age. We're proud of that.
A guy who's a little bit older but has made a pretty big move this year is Casey Gillespie. I mean, basically, he spent a half year in low A last year and then was hurt for a good portion in high A, went to double A, and now moved to triple A. What was the reasoning behind pushing him, and why has he succeeded in doing so?
Well, let me start when he came for Hudson Valley. It's hard. The number one pick, there's always a bullseye on your chest. There's an adjustment. You know, okay, you get through with the Hudson Valley season, then he goes to the to our Bowling Green club, and actually did pretty good. But there was this kid, Jake Bowers, that was doing pretty good at a level higher. So now they both start off at the same season. But in Casey, he is a little bit older. He's 23. I think he, even though he was a college sign, he matured mentally. He matured, believe it or not, physically, the right mindset. And we love Jake Bowers. We love Casey Gillespie. Gillespie has more power. Bowers more steady with the bat. And we have two bright young kids that can help our big league team one day. But Casey, being a little bit older, we gave him the edge to get to Durham. And he's holding his own. We're happy about that.
Real good stuff, Mitch. We appreciate some time. Nice to see so many of your teams also competing for the postseason. And we will talk to you soon, I'm sure, about, again, further evolutions within the system.
You got it, Neil. Always my pleasure. Thank you.
That is the Director of Minor League Operations for the Rays in one, Mitch Lukovich. If you're looking for an outing for friends, family, or coworkers, well, you can bring your group out to the ballpark. Get a great discount on the ticket price. Call today. Learn how each member of your group can get a Rays hat. Call 888-FAN-RAYS for more information. Well, we'll be back on This Week in Rays Baseball with a closer look at the trading deadline. We're going to hear from Anthony Castrovince of MLB.com, more on the Yankees move, that and much more after this on the Rays Baseball Network. Welcome back to This Week in Rays Baseball. I'm Neil Solons. Big trade today at the deadline. Andrew Miller, of course, going to the Cleveland Indians. Now, the thought was Jonathan Lucroy was going to go as well. He has vetoed that deal, apparently, from Milwaukee. Talked to Anthony Castrovince of MLB.com and Sports on Earth before the show. And, again, for full disclosure, we actually didn't know at the time that Lucroy had said no, but got his take on what the Indians were doing.
Yeah, it's quite a haul. And for the Indians, the important element of this is that both those guys are under control beyond 2016, because obviously they very much raided their farm system to get these deals in place. And it speaks to two things. It speaks to, one, the urgency that they feel for 2016. You know, they enter the week with the best record of the American League. There's obviously great value in that. There's great value in their starting rotation, but there were also some holes on this club, and they filled those with, you know, obviously two of the best players in this trade market. But for them, it's still a reasonably safe play in that, you know, the contractual control is reasonable beyond 2016. And it extends that window in the quote-unquote Terry Francona era.
And certainly gives them this year and at least next year, because Lucroy signed for next year. Miller is signed through 18. And, you know, I look at a lot of what either MLB.com's, you know, prospect experts or Baseball America is saying. They had seven of the top 100 prospects in the game, so they did have some room without destroying their entire system.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was something, it was an interesting juncture. You could even kind of see it coming going into the season. not that you could see trades of this magnitude going into the season, but you could certainly see where they were really set up well, where, you know, despite having a very quiet winter, especially relative to some other clubs even in the division, it was one of those things where you could see if they could just be frisky, if they can hang around contention, you know, mid-season, they had the pieces to make moves and to make upgrades. And then, of course, on both fronts, that became exaggerated in a good way. They weren't just frisky or fringy. They were, you know, as I said, best record in the division, best record in the American League. And it wasn't just some nice upgrades. It was, you know, probably the best all-around player who will be dealt at this deadline in Luke Roy. Obviously, he impacts the game in a lot of ways, defensively and offensively. And, you know, it's a coin toss between Chapman or Miller as to who's mm-hmm. the best reliever move, but it's clearly one of those two guys. And the beauty of Miller is, of course, the contractual control beyond this one. And the Indians do have the option, just floating it out there, but they do have the option at season's end or, you know, this winter, if they wanted to flip Miller to someone else and recoup some of that prospect value, that's certainly an option they could entertain.
Certainly, and, you know, the other thing is Miller's been more flexible, where he pitched right. for the Yankees in whatever role, where Chapman has been seen as a guy who wants to finish the game and be in the ninth inning.
Yeah, that's a key point as well. You know, Cody Allen, the Indians closer, he's pretty underrated what he's done for them in the ninth inning the last few years, but he even said last week he was open to a role change in the right scenario, and that was at the time, you know, before Chapman went to the Cubs and before anybody knew what was going to happen with Miller. But, you know, it's something he is open to. He's not married to that ninth inning role, which is important for them. So now they have two guys back there, Allen and Miller, who are both very good at what they do, one from the right-hand side, one from the left-hand side, and they're both they're both guys who are comfortable in whatever role, which is something that's very important in this game. You don't always see that. People get so accustomed to that ninth inning and the routine that comes with that, so flexibility is important here.
Anthony, you cover the Indians for MLB.com, so what's your take on this for the city of Cleveland?
It's just great. You know, obviously, coming off the Cavs championship in the NBA, there's just a different sense of optimism around here. It's not the, you know, when is the other shoe going to drop kind of feel, and this only adds to that, and it certainly... It probably inspires a section of the fan base that was very skeptical and has been very skeptical for many years when it comes to the team. We've seen the attendance numbers. You know, it's a team that struggled to draw even when having some decent seasons the last few years. You've seen an attendance uptick in recent weeks. They were on the road the better part of July. The Republican National Convention was in town, so they were on the road coming out of the All-Star break for, you know, for 10 days or so. But they came home to great crowds, and this only amplifies that. It's got people pretty fired up.
You know, I would think that this also compares somewhat to what Kansas City did last year. I mean, they got Ben Zobrist and Johnny Cueto
yeah.
last year at the deadline. Do small market teams, are they now realizing the window may be very short and you have to capitalize when you have the chance to win a World Series?
Yeah, I think so. I think you have to maximize your moment. I think the Indians know that. And you look around, the Indians are a team built around their starting pitching. And that's such a great strength to have in this game, to have controllable starting pitching that is cheap. I mean, their rotation, they're paying like $13 or $14 million for these guys this year. So they recognize the value of that, but they also, I mean, you look at the New York Mets and the injuries they've had, that's a team built around their rotation and got them to the World Series last year and really been ravaged by injuries this year. It's a strength that can change in a hurry, and I think you have to really capitalize on your moment when it's presented to you. The Royals certainly did that last year. They had that look in their eye all year after getting to the World Series and falling short in 2014. For the Indians, it's a little different in that they haven't been there yet,
mm-hmm.
But this is certainly a club. We know this is a club with a starting pitching to ascend through October, and now they've really rounded out the rest of the roster very well.
And for the Yankees, it's the first time in more than two decades you're
yeah.
seeing a what appears to be at least a rebuild for now.
Yeah, and I think this is a tremendous job by Brian Cashman. I really do. He had to sell this to ownership that this is the right course for this franchise because it's not. There's a lot of reluctance to go down this road because the Yankees represent something big, you know, and this is not in their DNA to go this route. But it was certainly the prudent path given the makeup of the roster, the age of the roster, the financial commitments on the roster. They're getting some major money coming off the books in the next 2 years, and. You know, what they've done here in these trades, they've really they've moved their system up the ladder in a big way. They now have one of the strongest farm systems in baseball, for my money, after this haul they got for Chapman and Miller. And they can still move Carlos Beltran. So it's just a wonderful job by Cashman to recognize the opportunity here, you know, the value of elite relief in today's game. And the Royals are a big part of that. You know, they're part of this trend. What they've done in October the last couple of years, they've shown teams where that can get you. So, you know, there was a time where relievers just weren't worth this much in the trade market. You think about the Miller trade. You compare the Miller trade to the Jonathan Lucroy trade, and how much more the Indians had to give up for Miller versus Lucroy. You're talking about an elite catcher in the game, and an elite reliever had even more value. So it says a lot about where today's game is, and good on the Yankees for capitalizing on it.
And that is one Anthony Castrovince of MLB.com, and we certainly thank him for joining us again. The big move that occurred today was the Yankees trading Andrew Miller from New York to Cleveland and getting a slew of prospects, probably the top of which is Clint Frazier, who a lot of people have dated as, you know, really a five-tool guy. The Yankees have really made what you would consider the two major deals with Jonathan Lucroy voiding his, and that was the fact that they traded Aroldis Chapman earlier in the week. Now, we hope to have Sweeney Murdy join us in a couple of minutes live, but right now I did chat with him a little bit before the Miller trade about Aroldis Chapman and what his original take was on this entire deal.
Let's start with the Aroldis Chapman trade, because that was the big move this past week in Major League Baseball. What were your original thoughts?
Well, the Yankees did pretty good with the haul that they got from the Cubs, and that's what it was going to take to move Chapman. He's really the first easy piece to move for the Yankees because he is going to be a free agent at the end of the year. The thing I found interesting, Neil, was listening to Chapman after the trade and just watching him. He really seemed attached to the Yankees, even though he'd only been there for a couple of months. He really seemed disappointed that he was being traded. And then seeing the reaction that he got in Chicago and how, you know, just simply because of what happened, and it's, you know, it's completely understandable that he was kind of being grilled a lot. He didn't seem to – I think he thought that he had already addressed that stuff and that it was over, but now he's on a new team. And, you know, fast forward, if he signs with another team in the winter as a free agent, he has to go through that again. So having already said that he likes his time with the Yankees, that – he would want to come back as a free agent. I'm thinking if you add all that together, maybe just as a comfort factor, he doesn't have to go through and answer that another round of questions to another city's media and other city's fans. Maybe that's something that leads him back to the Yankees. So if you add that up and think about the top prospect they got back, plus Adam Warren, who helps this pen now, I think the Yankees made a pretty good deal.
Without question. I mean, to me, it seemed a no-brainer, but it still was unusual for the Yankees to move a part ahead of the deadline.
Yeah, off their major league roster, sure. You know, people will say when was the last time the Yankees were actual sellers? You have to go back to 1989 when they traded Ricky Henderson to the Oakland A's. Other than that, the Yankees are usually picking up pieces at this time of year, and they kind of did. You know, I mean, they added a top-level prospect and a piece to their bullpen. They really just shuffled what is still the strength of their team because they still have Dellin Betances and Andrew Miller. And if you add Adam Warren to the mix that can kind of bridge those sixth and seventh inning roles there, well, then that's something that they've just shuffled pieces in their bullpen while adding to their prospect base.
So you use the term seller, though. Are they truly a seller? Does it depend what happens today on this Sunday in the last game between these two teams in this series going into Monday's trading deadline? Do they move other pieces like Carlos Beltran? What's your take?
I think they're kind of still close enough that I don't think they'll get enough for a player like Beltran at this point that makes it worth moving. You know, this isn't a team that's just looking to shed the extra payroll and get whatever they can get. I think they feel that they could. It's the same case with a guy like Ivan Nova. I think they feel like if they don't get something worth trading him for, then there's no point in actually doing it. And maybe, you know, there's still a belief that there is a spurt, a run in this team, because they've really been nothing more than a 500 team.
And that is Sweeney Murdy from yesterday before the big Andrew Miller deal. And we now have Sweeney with us. And Sweeney, give us your take on this. How surprised were you? And did two losses to the Rays change that much?
A little surprised, yeah.
did the losses change that much? It's hard to tell because I feel like they're still kind of supplementing the big league team because of the Tyler Clippard acquisition. And you're looking at the prospects they got back. I think they feel like a big part of what they're doing with these deals is adding to their minor league system and adding real quality when you consider three of the prospects they just got in these last two deals. So I think it's hard to say because you are where you are. I don't know if you can accurately say, well, if they had won these last two games, they wouldn't have made this deal because maybe Cleveland still, because you're looking at it from Cleveland's perspective too, maybe they're still offering this and say, we have to have this player.
Good point. From a farm system standpoint, I mean, the Yankees now have seven of the top 100 prospects in the game, and many more that probably are just on the outside of that. Do they believe that a lot of these guys are going to be future pieces, or does this just give them more maneuverability going forward?
I think it's both. I mean, I think you have to look at the Yankees as a team that's not looking 3 years down the road. They are still looking at today. As I said, you know, they've kind of shuffled the pieces in a very big strength for the team. The only strength of the team is their bullpen. Well, you still have Dellin Betances back there. You've kind of looks like maybe a combination of Adam Warren and Tyler Clippard getting you through the seventh and eighth innings, a couple of other arms that you've seen in this series as well. And, and then still trying to figure out the rest of this with a lot of the prospects they've gotten. They have a lot of outfield depth right now. They have a lot of shortstop depth right now. So, I mean, they've got athletes. And I think what you try to do is move those guys around the field when necessary as they move up the big league level and use them if you need to. They certainly now when you talk about whether it's Chris Sale or somebody else that comes out there over the next year or so, you say, who has the prospects to get a player like that? I think you're always going to look at the Yankees being able to do that. The question is, do they kind of throw them all out there and go all in that situation?
Certainly going to be interesting to see how they handle it going forward. You know, have they also realized what was a change in the marketplace, and that is never before were relievers valued this much? I mean, maybe the Ken Giles, Vince Velasquez deal started to change the tenor, but what the Royals did the last couple of years, has that kind of changed the value of a reliever for getting someone for the postseason,
yeah,
in essence?
I guess you found that out in the last two deals, and you're talking about a couple of teams in unique situations. You know who the Cubs are and how long it's been since they won, and trying to separate themselves from teams that also needed relief help in the National League, like Washington and San Francisco, and they were able to pull the trigger on that deal. And you look at the Cleveland Indians, who all of a sudden got hot and shot to the top of the Central and can look at the rest of the league and say, you know, we can be better than these guys if we close out ball games. The Rangers were in the same situation, and the Indians were able to take advantage. I found it unlikely that the Indians were going to do something like that because they value their talent so much. But, you know, you find an opportunity, you take a chance. You know, Cleveland all of a sudden is the city of champions here. You know, they can't lose. So maybe the hot streak they went on, look at the landscape around the AL and say, this is a deal you have to make. Plus the fact that this guy was signed for two more years. It wasn't a rental. I'm sure that influenced the Indians as well.
Correct, and they still have four of the top 100 prospects, even with what they surrendered in these deals. The big player, though, is Clint Frazier. How good do the Yankees feel he can be?
They think he's an electric bat, in Brian Cashman's words. They think he's an incredible athlete with a lot of energy, can play all the outfield positions, so he's flexible there. Guy was a first-round pick and a national player of the year out of high school. He's moved up to the AAA level, so he's kind of knocking on the door. I think they feel very good about his ability there.
Well, Sweeney, we certainly appreciate a few minutes, especially under the circumstances. Thanks for joining us on the day before the deadline after this big deal.
Thanks, Neil. Nice to follow myself on tape.
You got it. That's Sweeney Murdy again from WFAN, the Yankees beat reporter. You've seen him probably many times on MLB Network, and we appreciate all of his time and that of Anthony Castrovince of MLB.com. Also, we appreciate joining us Kevin Jepsen, our featured guest, as well as Todd Callis of Fox Sports Sun. And from the minor league side of the Rays, we certainly appreciate Jared Sandberg being with us, along with Mitch Lukovich. Next week, we're going to chat with Luke Maley. You can always email us with your thoughts on Twitter, again, at Neil Solons. Coming up, it's the Rays pregame show. That's just in a moment. You're listening to the Rays Baseball Network.